Hi everyone, this is Brooke James. Welcome to The Grief Coach. If this is your first time listening, I'm so glad you're here. And if you've listened before, welcome back. Before we get into the interview today, I just want to take a moment to ask you, if you are enjoying the podcast, to please write a nice review on Apple Podcast and to rate us 5 stars, and to also share this with people you think would find it beneficial. And that's all. We'll get into the interview now. I'm so excited. We have with us Patricia DiPicciotto, founder of Neshama Journey.
Patricia, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hi, Brooke. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you again. I remember we had a live together on Instagram this summer.
Yes.
But I'm this so time excited. You're the one asking questions.
Yes. Thank you so much.
I'm ready for you.
For being here. I love your content online and your energy is just so lovely. And I'm really excited for our conversation today. So thank you for being here. So if you to introduce yourself to the audience and tell your grief story.
Yeah. So my name is Patricia DiPicciotto. I was born in Hong Kong, but raised in Geneva. I lived there with my family for almost all my life until I was 20. And then my mom moved to Brazil and I followed her a few years later after college. She had remarried there and I ended up living there with her for 10 years. I met my husband, had kids, but then moved to New York. Unfortunately, and that's crazy how things happen, but the day I was going to move to New York, my stepfather, her husband, got the news that he was diagnosed with cancer. And that was really on the day of, like we were leaving to the airport. It was Wednesday, I think March 11th. And my mom had to come to my house for like 5 minutes to say goodbye because her husband was going into surgery the next morning.
Wow.
So leaving for me was very hard. And I really never thought that leaving that day was the beginning of years of cancer and losses. And my stepfather had colon cancer. He had a remission, but then he came back. And unfortunately, he passed away July 2018. But my mom had been already diagnosed with cancer a few months before. So it was tough. Me leaving my mom behind, I thought it was just, you know, it's okay, you'll be visiting and I'll come back. I never thought that me leaving would be coming back all the time to take care of her and also to visit her husband. So my mom was diagnosed in January 2018, pancreatic cancer. And it's crazy because we were always so worried about her husband, right? And just a month before, he had got his terminal diagnosis that there was nothing else they could do for him. And he didn't want any more treatment. He was just tired. It had been almost, I think, 3 years since the first diagnosis. And, you know, we had to respect his decision. And I think it was hard for my mom. She wanted him to fight me a little bit more. But truth is, he was exhausted and the chances were so small. He just didn't want to, you know, have a bad quality of life for the next month. So, you know, December 2017, they just thought, okay, let's spend the month that we have together. And a month after, my mom got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So it was shock on top of another shock. And all of a sudden, both of them were sick. I went back to Sao Paulo. My mother had surgery. She was able to, you know, have her tumor removed. But 6 months later, when he passed, I think the body responds a lot to the mind. And a few months later, her cancer came back, November 2018. And that was it. For a year, the cancer was very, very aggressive. A few months later, they found some metastasis in her liver, although she was responding really well to chemo. For those 2 years, she was able to have some kind of normal life, even with her chemo treatment. But once the metastasis in the liver were discovered, we kind of knew it was final. She tried one very last treatment that was pretty aggressive. And I'd like to say maybe aggressive, like too aggressive for her immunity. And she got an infection in the hospital. And the last 3 months of her life, she was basically, you know, in bed or in the hospital. And somehow we were still hopeful. I have to say, like, even with the liver metastasis diagnosis, even with the last treatment where she was responding in that certain way, where she was extremely weak, extremely frail, and we knew her body was not able to battle any, you know, other infection, we were still hopeful that it was just a matter of time and just a matter of getting some rest. But unfortunately, end of October 31st, I'll never forget, because it's Halloween, so this is going to be, you know, in me for the rest of my life. The doctor came to me and asked me to see me outside of the room. And when a doctor asks you to come outside, it's never good news. And I remember him, you know, my mom was sleeping. At that point, she was sleeping most of the time. She was extremely tired. And the doctor came and I'm like, yeah, she's sleeping. And he was like, no, but I actually came to see you. Do you mind if we step outside? And I was like, oh shit, like it cannot be good news. You know, if he had any good news, he would even like, you know, ask me to wake up my mom. And I'll just never forget that scene. I was still in my pajama because I would sleep in the hospital with my mom. And I was barefoot in that hospital hallway. And he told me we got the results. And now the cancer is in her lungs, like the metastasis went into her lungs. And she only has maybe a few weeks to live. We don't know how long, I cannot tell you, but I think it's time for you to start calling your family, because my sisters live in Switzerland. I'm the only one who used to live in Brazil and then moved to New York. So he told me, I think you need to start calling your family. And I don't know, something happened at that moment. It's a blur. You feel like, you know, you're in the hospital, you know, you're in the hallway, and everything went like pitch black. I felt like, I don't know, the world had collapsed. And in 2 seconds, I had to literally freeze my brain, because I had to go back into that room, face my mom as if nothing had happened. I asked the doctor, I'm like, I am not telling my mom. I'm making all the phone calls. I'm calling my sisters. I'm calling my husband. I'm not telling my mom. And he said, don't worry, it's not your job. It's my job to tell my patient. I'll come back tomorrow with the hospital psychiatrist, and that's protocol, and we'll tell her. So for 24 hours, I had to fake it. So that's when I really think something in my brain happened. I was not even able to cry. I couldn't cry. Like, my mom would have noticed if I had tears in my eyes, if I was different, if I looked worried. She was very intuitive, especially with me. Like, we were so close. She would have known that I was hiding something. And I came back into the room. My mom was still sleeping. I was able to grab my phone, still in my PJ, still barefoot. And I went to this, I don't know, kind of like waiting room that they have for people to make phone calls. And I went there and I started like calling my sister, calling my other sister, calling my husband. And I had to listen to everyone's shock. And I wasn't able to react, because at any minute I needed to go back to the room and face my mom. Mm-hmm. So I will never forget that day. It was crazy. And she had friends visiting that afternoon. And I had to just fake it, you know, and make it as, you know, it was just a normal day in the hospital, you know, having my mom's friend over, making small conversation. And then the next day, I remember the doctor came and I left the room, and he called me back and she's like, your mother wants you to be there. And I thought I was going to like just throw up or faint. And I'm like, I can't be there when he tells her. It's just too much for me. And it was. I don't know, it's a scene I'll never forget. I'll never forget her eyes. I'll never forget how, you know, for her, it was a battle that she had lost, although I knew she had fought so much, so much. And she looked at me with those eyes and she said, I'm not going to be able to make it to your son's bar mitzvah, because for her, it was always a goal to be able to have another couple of years, like 2-3 years, and be there. And that was like that sentence. And I finally was able to cry, because I had to keep it inside of me for 24 hours. And I told her, I know, I spoke to the doctor yesterday. I couldn't tell you. I just couldn't announce it to you this way. And she asked to be alone with the psychiatrist for a moment, and they had a conversation that I'm sure they talked about death, and she asked the doctor to make sure she wouldn't feel anything at the end and she wouldn't suffer. But I mean, at that moment, I left the room and I was finally able to cry and process the whole thing. But it was crazy. Mm-hmm. And she had another 3 weeks, and she really fought again very hard, because her 70th birthday was on November 17th, 2019. And that's a birthday that she had very big plans for. Like, she really wanted to celebrate that birthday. Like, for a year, we're talking about that birthday. We're going to go on a cruise with the family. We'll go to Miami. I don't know. She just had plans. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she was able to celebrate, maybe not the way she wanted to, but it was a beautiful farewell party. We had my kids. My sister was here with her husband. She had some of her sisters-in-law, some of her very close friends. It was a day full of emotion, but you know, I could tell that she wanted that. She wanted that last party. She wanted to dress up for the last time. My mom was very vain. She'd love to dress up, love to, you know, have her accessories matching her outfit. And she was all about the wigs after she started chemo, because she was able to have like all those cool wigs. And she wanted that. She wanted that last celebration. So we were, you know, able to organize it for her at the hospital. And it was hard, but this will be probably my most cherished memories from those last weeks we've spent together. I was able to have 3 weeks with her after the terminal diagnosis. We had many, many conversations, but somehow the picture of that day and the fact that we were able to like sing happy birthday last time, it was extremely meaningful. And just like that, the next day she was starting to lose, you know, consciousness a little bit. And then 2 days later, she was on morphine. So you can tell that she really fought until the end to be able to be, you know, fully present and to really like live her life to the fullest until the end.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. There were so many pieces that stood out to me. One being my dad did a similar like last hurrah thing, and we had his last birthday, but and I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before, but he was in the toy industry and the big trade show was in February, and he was like, I gotta do Toy Fair. But I think he knew it was the last time he was going to see a lot of these people, and he really wanted that. And I think for those of us who are watching someone we love be sick and deteriorate, like it's this like bittersweet, because you know that it's something that they want, and you know it's making them happy to have that kind of like farewell, but it's a farewell. So it's really difficult to watch. Yeah. So if you can talk a little bit about one thing that before we started recording, kind of the grief aftermath after someone you love dies, that both of us were, I'll use the word fortunate, to not be working due to different circumstances, but that it allowed you to pause, and that was really helpful in your grieving process. Could you expand on that, please?
Yeah, of course. I have to say I was really lucky, because I worked for myself. I was an art guide. So I used to organize art experiences and art tours in New York. And I mean, for years, you know, it was very booming, and all of a sudden I had to leave everything because my mother, so that was, remember, 2019, so before COVID, I needed to be there. She was in the hospital almost full-time at the end. So from September until she passed end of November, I was basically not working. And then I had to stay in Brazil for a while to take care of all her stuff, all the administration. And it's only when I came back to New York in January that, you know, I was able to focus on my work. But then I thought, I'm just going to take a little bit off. Anyway, it's winter, January, February. No one's visiting galleries, no tourists in the streets. So all good. And COVID started, and I haven't been working now for over a year and a half. But I have to say, it was almost a gift in disguise, because if I had not been able to pause this way, I just wonder how my grief would have been. Mm-hmm. I always wonder, like, if COVID had not, like, not COVID, but like the lockdown, if we were not locked down, and I could just go back to museum and go back to having, you know, tourists coming to my tours, I might not have grieved the way I did. And I might not have founded this community on Instagram, because truth is, it's very easy to escape a little bit when, you know, when you can, and you know, need to like face your pain. But there's one thing that happened to me in January when I came back to New York. I had kind of lost my faith. Lost my faith is a bit too strong, but I had to reconnect with my faith. You know, I had to like not understand why it happened, because we'll never have answers, but why does a person that is so joyful, full of life, that wanted to live so much, you know, had to suffer so many years, had her, you know, first if her husband taken away, then her. And I started Kabbalah classes, because I'm Jewish, but I'm not observant, although I just needed to know
more. Me too.
Oh, you too. Okay. Yeah. So I'm not really observant. I do, you know, respect a lot of tradition. I do the high holidays. But once you start, you know, this grieving mourning process, there are so many rules. And truth is, I really wanted to respect all of them because of my mom. I think my mom was much more observant than me, and she had respected them for her parents. And I knew it was something important for her. So I'm like, okay, if I'm going to respect all those rules, and they're hard, you know, it's like, no, you're not going out for a year, not listening to music, not buying anything new, not, you know, you're not going to like dress up and do your makeup and go out. No, you're grieving. It's like a proper year of mourning. And I started reading those books about, you know, life and death in Judaism and what happened to the soul. So I just decided to take some Kabbalah classes. And I remember the rabbi saying something about, you know, when you are in front of a very difficult situation, you have to pause. Don't be reactive. Try to sit with it. Try to think about it. Just don't react right away. And at the end of the class, I'm like, how do I pause my mother's death? Like, that's it. Her life has, you know, has paused already. Like, what else can I do? And he said, it's not about the past. It's not about what happened. You know, you, of course, you cannot pause what happened to your mom, but you can pause your life now. You can just take a moment to reflect about, you know, the grieving process and your loss. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we talked a little bit more about that first year of mourning in Judaism, and it made total sense. But the thing is, I was able to take that pause to another level, because I ended up at home. We have so many restrictions. I mean, I think that even if I wasn't, you know, mourning, I wouldn't have gone out for dinner or party or anything. So I really took that like mourning to another level. I was home anyway. So for me, being in lockdown wasn't any different than 2 weeks before. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I had the privilege of not working, it just made me more available to read more, listen to grief podcasts. So all of a sudden, I went all in my grief. I was going out every day for walks, listening to grief podcasts. I was able to read much more. And then it started getting a little bit isolated, I have to say, in the middle of that first lockdown around April, May. And I started looking at online grief support, because I thought everything is moving online now. I'm sure I'm going to find a grief support for motherless daughters online. And I ended up joining up a group on Facebook. And then I realized, oh my God, there's so many people going through the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought, of course, it's not only me, but in my circle, not so many people had gone through, you know, the loss of a parent. So I was like, this is so refreshing to be able to open up and speak freely and just talk about my mom, talk about my grief, post picture of her. You know, I really gave myself permission to openly grieve. So first I gave myself permission to pause, and mm-hmm. then I gave myself permission to grieve with all my vulnerability and all that need that I had to be witnessed and seen and understood, because yeah. although I was supported and I have a husband and three kids at home, so I wasn't alone, but none of them can understand what I'm going through. And even my dad, he still has his mother, she's like 96, so even my father cannot understand what it is to lose a mom. And
right.
that's how I created my Instagram account. I just wanted a place where I could follow other people who are sharing their story about grief. I was going to be able to post about my mom without, you know, having to think about what other people are going to say. Am I posting too much about my mom? Is it appropriate, not appropriate? Can I talk yeah. about this or not? And I had this safe place where I could just open up. And it happened organically that I started conversation with so many people outside of Instagram, like video calls. And then I had this idea of doing lives on Instagram because I wanted yeah. to know more.
Tell us about that, because I think it's very interesting online that so many people, like, you don't realize until you like key into some of the resources. It's so robust. There's so many different grief accounts, support groups, whatever it is, that are offering something that's a little bit unique. And I would love you to talk about your lives and why you started them.
I really started them because all those conversations started to happen outside of Instagram. So people would DM me or like reply to a story or something, and then we would start chatting. And then we would connect and do like a video chat on Instagram. And the format, it was just like a live conversation. And it's all of a sudden so easy to speak with someone that you've never seen in your life, but went through a very similar loss. Mm-hmm. And you connect to a whole other level. And I just thought, you know what, that could be very helpful for a lot of people to listen to other people's stories. As I said, like before that, I would read a lot of grief books. I would listen to a lot of podcasts. And I knew that it worked for me. I knew that listening to other people's story was helping me going through my grief. Mm-hmm. And all those conversations that I was having with those people just opened my eyes that we need more, like we need more open conversation. We need to give the voice to so many people, not only post, like we need to like ask questions, and just like you're doing on the podcast, but live. And it's been happening. And now I think I recorded almost 40 wow. lives, and I'm just going to keep on going, because every time I have such an amazing feedback of people, you know, thanking us, thank you for sharing. This has been so helpful, because of course you help a lot of people when you post on Instagram, but when you can have a real conversation, not only gives you the yes. permission to grieve also, but it gives you so many insight on how the other people grieve. And also what has been helpful for me, because now I've only been, what, a year and 2 months into my grief. When I talk to people that have lost a mom or a dad or, you know, any losses, and I see them and I'm like, wow, you've been here for like 5 years and you're like this, it gives a lot of hope. It makes you want to continue, to just like continue moving forward, knowing that you can still be grieving, living your life, without being disconnecting from your loved one. That helped me tremendously.
Do you find that because you were allowed to really dive in to grief and hear all of these different stories, and then taking the initiative to have these conversations in a public forum for people, that it helped you move through your grief faster? I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but process. Like, I find when I'm talking to people, they're like, oh, your dad only died a year and a half ago. Like, you can talk about it. And I'm like, because they've spent the time to be able to talk about it. Did you find that as well?
Yes, definitely. And I could see that after I started the Instagram, so that was 6 months into my grief, and I was able to talk about it all the time. Somehow I was feeling lighter and lighter, because mm-hmm. you carry this weight over your shoulder and you'll carry it for all your life, but it might get, you know, a little bit lighter with time. And I just felt that that was happening, that I was just free to talk about my mom.
And I don't need to wait. That was very heavy for me, to wait for a friend to call me and ask about my mom, or even to wait for my own siblings to, you know, send me a message talking about my mom. I'm usually the one who always like start the conversation, send pictures, bring memories on the table, but it just gave me that permission to not have to wait on anyone anymore. And the fact that I had worked on those expectations also helped me to not be so resentful, because I was really getting to that point where, okay, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I know everyone is like panicking right now, at so many things are happening, but obviously no one is asking me, how am I doing? You know, like my grief was like long forgotten at that point. And I did have a lot of resentment again towards some friends. Mm-hmm. So it helped me with this as well. I don't have to wait for someone now to call me or to think about, you know, asking about me or my mom or anything. I can just go and talk to these people with Instagram, post something, interact with other motherless daughters, and definitely help me.
It's so empowering to be able to choose when you're talking about it, but also in this weird way to be able to share without worrying about it. Like, I try to keep my, I have like a personal Instagram and I post about my dad sometimes, but I try to keep a lot more of it on the Grief Coach Instagram, because the people who are there are open to hearing about this. And I think even though, like, I know, and you know, like, it never goes away. Mm-hmm. I sometimes I'm like, will my friends think that I shouldn't be talking about this much? And like, people who have experienced a loss don't think like that, but the people who have not, they don't get it. And like, you don't get it until you go through it. So I think having those communities online that we've both built is like really special. I'm always surprised pleasantly, like, how open people are, like, with strangers, and it's very freeing.
But I think because there's a real need to talk about this. As I said, for months, I was like, okay, I need to talk about my mom. I want to talk about my mom. I was waiting for people to call me or to ask me. And now I don't need to wait on anyone's permission to talk about my mom. And the great thing is sometimes you start a conversation with someone on a live and it will bring you to talk about something about your loss or grief or the disease or the years before that you maybe had not thought about. So it's like free therapy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it. I'm going to therapist every day, but with someone who experienced loss, so they know what you're talking about and they're not judging you. And I think maybe that's why I feel lighter now, because I've been going to therapy every day now for almost 9 months, talking about my mom with people that are understanding what I'm going through. And that's very refreshing. And as I said, it took also the weight off the resentment that I was carrying towards a lot of people.
Yeah. I think there are so many ways that we can like find peace. Like, I, similar to you, like, I went on a walk every day, and like, that was really important for my mental health, and these like interactions with others who have gone through something similar. But also was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you grieved tapping into your creative side.
Yeah, my mom was an artist, not a selling artist, but she was really an artist. Like, ever since I was a young kid, like, I remember her embroidering her dress or drawing, coloring. She would like, you know, draw her outfit and then go by the fabrics. And she was extremely creative. And she would paint on china and, you know, make dishes for the house. And it was always a very creative person who loved color, loved glitter, loved paint. And when she passed, she had all those art supplies. She had so much art supplies. Like, I didn't even know what to do. There were like tons of, you know, paint tubes that I had to donate because I couldn't carry them, you know, in my luggages back to New York. But I kept so many of her pencils, of her markers, and she was very specific about her art supplies. Like, she had like a specific Japanese markers and those like German pencils. So she was very specific. So all I was able to bring back, you know, I took them with me and I just started painting and I started coloring. And for the first, I would say month or month and a half, coloring and painting was all I was able to do. Somehow I was connecting with my mom through this. And yes, I went for many, many walks and listened to many, many podcasts, but it was also a form of therapy, I think, an art therapy to be, you know, coloring mandalas, painting, and I started painting on leaves. My mom had all those drawings, so I photographed them, I arranged them in books. I created all those memory books for my mom with all our messages that we kept, all the condolences messages that I received. And I just used my creativity almost every day because I thought that I was connecting with her. Mm-hmm. And I started journaling. This is not something I used to do. I used to have this little like Hello Kitty diary when I was a little girl, but then I never wrote in my journal again. And after my mom passed, I really felt the need to write. And I started writing and writing and writing and writing. First, I wanted to write about all those weeks we had together, all those like last 3 weeks that were so important. I didn't want to forget anything about what we talked about, you know, some details of the moment we spent together. So I started writing this and then I started journaling. So for me, all this writing was also very creative because, you know, I was writing all those writing prompts and remembering some memories, putting pictures in my journal. So it helped me in a way. It makes you escape for a little while. Like I really think this form of therapy that you're like into your painting or into your coloring, into your writing, it helps you put all your emotions on the paper. And for a little while, you kind of, you're able to turn off your mind and escape a little bit. And it's very meditative to do that.
I was just gonna say it puts you in like a meditative state. Yeah.
I started before my mom got sick, but when she got sick, I think I had very high level of anxiety because,
of course,
you know, especially when you get like a pancreatic cancer diagnosis, you know that it's, you know, the chances of surviving this are extremely low. And this is when I really started my meditation practice. But it's always either a guided meditation or a mantra meditation or sun bath. But those like coloring and painting, you know, therapy, they do put you mm-hmm. into a meditative state. And the writing too, when you write, you look at the clock, you've been writing for 2 hours and you've put all those like emotions on the paper. You just put it out and it's cleansing.
And I think like that's what so many people in, I think the US especially, but if you have insight into how it works in any other countries, I don't know, from your sisters in Switzerland or anything, I would love to hear. But in the US, it's like, okay, you have a few days off, you can go to the funeral, and then like, thank you. And like, after a few months, like no one wants to hear about it anymore. And it's all still inside you. And it will continue to be for your whole life, because the relationship with your loved one doesn't go away. It's just like, you still think about them. Like, and so getting the emotions out, whether it's writing, whether it's drawing, whether it's walking, like I found movement to be very meditative for me. Yeah. And talking about it, like it's so important. And I think so many people do such a disservice to just suppress what they're feeling. Yeah.
Because you're talking about movement, it's really a flow. Because when you're talking, there's like a flow of words. You just need to get them out of your system. When you're writing, you have your hands moving all the time. And you're not doing it consciously. It's really your mind dictating whatever you're writing. So it is movement. And that's the thing. Don't let all your emotions stagnate in your body. It will be, you know, it will have consequences later. So
absolutely.
Movement can be, of course, movement, running, dancing, but also just getting the emotions flowing and the words flowing. So yeah, it can be talking, it can be writing, it can be painting, coloring. don't let it stagnate. It will lodge itself somewhere in your body, and you don't want this to happen in a few years. But to answer your question about, you know, bereavement leave, my sister, my middle sister, she only had a few days off. And because my mom was in Brazil, she left on a Thursday, but she had to be back to work on a Tuesday. So she left on a Thursday. She arrived in Brazil on Wednesday, on Friday morning. My mom passed Friday night. She was buried Sunday morning. And my sister had to leave the next day because she had to be back to work. So this also was a bit disappointing, you know, that society reacts this way to someone who's grieving. Just giving like 3 to 5 days for bereavement leave, this is absurd. And that's also showing how, you know, grief illiterate society is, because they think that you have to be over in a few days,
which is crazy.
So how do you expect people to go back to work when they just had such a big shock in their life? And for them, it's just like flu leave. You know, you have the flu, you just leave for a week and you have to be back and in shape. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's terrible because it's considered almost like a disease. Like, you're grieving and you'll heal from it and then it's going to be gone. But that's not how it is. It's not something you're going to cure. So yeah, people definitely need to have more empathy and compassion towards grievers in society, because fixing those rules of few days for bereavement leave, or, oh, after a month, you're okay, you know, we don't need to talk about it anymore, it's not fair.
No. And it does all, both the griever and the people around them, such a disservice, because, like, as anyone who's listening knows, like, once you lose someone, like, the initial shock, of course, is, like, debilitating. But then it brings all of these emotions up that you need to deal with, and to not give someone the time to do that, plus all of the administrative things, which, like, today is a year and a half since my dad died, and I had the final hearing today for his estate. Like, it takes so long, and, like, it's such a disservice that so many people don't get the time they need. And I was also fortunate to not be working. But I remember my grandma was like, well, when are you going to go back to work? And I was like, what? Like, she's like, are you going to find another job? I was like, I can't do anything. Like, I can barely get out of bed. Like, no. And obviously, like, it depends on your personality and the relationship you had and, like, where you are. But, like, if you can take the time, it's so critical. And then if you can't, because it's like a really, not everyone can take an extended period of time off, like, to at least be spending the time in the evenings, on the weekends, your days off, whatever it is, because it's like, it was for me, it was for you and for so many people, it's like really critical to, like, do the work to move through it. Yeah.
So I had a friend who told me that, because he went back to work, but not only he went back to work, he went back to work and buried himself into work. Like, he was like,
so
okay,
common.
I'm going to escape this. I'm going to work day and night. And after a year, he had a major, major, major burnout. But, like, he stayed in a hospital for like 1 or 2 weeks. He was just... Wow. He was exhausted, but not only exhausted physically, he was exhausted emotionally. And all of a sudden, he had to face everything he hadn't faced a year before. So it will come back sooner or later. And as you said, and I know this from my sister, because she wasn't able to take any days off. And, you know, like, in Judaism, you usually the week you're supposed to, like, stay home and go through Shiva, which is a week of prayers and visitation. And you're really supposed to be pausing everything you're doing and being taken care of. So people are supposed to bring you food and, you know, serve you and take care of you. And I can tell that there's some wisdom behind this, because going back to work the next day or the right after, it's just crazy. So, of course, if you have to do it. Like, my sister had to do it. She went to the funeral and flew back to Geneva that same night. It's so important to find those moments at night, on the weekend. Just find those moments to reflect, to think about your person, to think about all it meant, you know, to have this person in your life. And, you know, it's not something, we've just said it before, it's not something that you're going to cure. You're going to live with it.
Yeah.
But you can live with it in a much lighter way if you face it. You don't have to carry this heavy, heavy, heavy weight all your life. As we said, movement, either walking or, you know, writing, dancing it off, painting, the emotions need to flow.
Yeah, because otherwise it gets static. And then, as you were saying, it lodges itself in your body. One thing that I was so thankful that people did for me, and I've suggested to other people, because people ask me all the time now, as I'm sure they do to you, of like, what do I do when, like, someone, they know someone who's lost somebody? Mm-hmm. I often suggest massages, and I got a couple of gifts of massages from friends, gift cards to different places in New York, because it lodges in your body. And I think that that's something that people, like, either don't realize, don't want to realize, whatever. It, like, a massage or acupuncture is so helpful and just, like, getting things moving. So then you can do that meditation, that writing, that walking, whatever it is, and it just, like, expels from your body. Yeah. It's so helpful. Like, I think massages are wonderful all the time. Acupuncture is wonderful all the time.
No, they are.
But, like, definitely. I think negative emotions really, like, can affect our body a lot more than we want to admit, because there's this, like, status symbol and being too busy to deal with a lot of things like that. Mm-hmm. For some people, taking the time is, I think, the biggest luxury to be able to deal with these things.
Yeah. So I had Reiki every day during Shiva. Every morning before going to my mother's house for the Shiva, I just had Reiki with a Reiki master that I knew from Sao Paulo, because I was drained. I could tell that I was physically drained, because when you have all these people visiting you, you have your own sadness, more than sadness. You have all your, you know, sadness, shock, your loss to have to deal with. But all these people, and it comes from a good heart, but they come with their sadness.
And then you feel, and like you have just to comfort them, right? That's what I felt.
Kind of, yes. And it kind of builds up on you. And at the end of the day, you're like, okay, I'm feeling even worse than I was feeling this morning, because everybody comes, like, they're either crying or they have their sad face, and we're gonna miss her, she's gonna be missed. And I'm like, I know she's gonna be missed. You know, I just had to have this session to be able to re-energize in some way, because I didn't know how to go through that whole week of Shiva. And I do believe a lot in energy, in crystal healing, in Reiki. So it's for me one more, you know, step in my self-care to be able to go through those first days.
Yeah.
Because you're in a shock. You're on automatic pilot, but you are still, you know, getting all this energy from these people. And it's, yeah, maybe as you say, you want to comfort the other people. I don't know if I was comforting other people, but you definitely don't want to maybe cry in front of everyone, or you want to appear not strong or brave, but
wanted to feel strong, like, but it's like you're falling apart.
Strong. I just didn't want to fall apart in front of everyone.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Because that's so vulnerable to do, especially exactly. A few days after, it's so raw. I was like, I don't know, my personality is, like, very, very blunt. And people would be like, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, terrible. Yeah. I wouldn't pretend, but I do think that part of, at least for me, when my dad was in hospice, so many people came to visit him from all over the world. And it was very touching to me. But you kind of have to host a little bit. And, like, they were bringing food and, you know, California, Paris, like, wherever people were coming from. And it was so comforting and lovely that these people made big trips to say goodbye to him. But I think I hid in the, like, oh, I'm dealing with all of the logistics, because it was easier there for some of it. I don't know. And you reminded me when you said you were doing Reiki that my dad while he was getting chemo at Yale, like literally like in the port, they had a woman come around in the oncology wing there who would do Reiki on patients, which I had never seen before or heard about. And I thought that was really lovely that they were doing that.
I think you have to believe in it, but I do believe in all those alternative therapy, whether it's Reiki or acupuncture or chakra opening, crystal healing, sound bath. And I turned to them a lot after, even before actually I lost my mom, but more after she passed, and it's just comforting. So that was also part for me of my, you know, mindful grieving. I just wanted to be, I needed to be present, because I think when, you know, someone you love passed away, either from sudden death or a long sickness, you realize how it can happen to anyone. Like my mom was so healthy, like literally like a few days before she was totally fine. And one day she woke up with like yellowish skin, you know, yellowish tone. Doctor, and oh, it's pancreatic cancer. And like, how? I had zero symptoms. She was totally fine. So you're just confronted to that truth, right? That anything can happen to anyone at any time, like either freak accident or sickness diagnosis or just sudden death. And I needed to be very focused on the present because I didn't want my mind to go in the future. Like, how am I going to do without her in 10 years? And how am I going to do with her next month? And how am I going to do it? And what if it happens to me? And what if it happens to my kids? So I had to recenter myself over and over and over again. Because when you're faced with someone's death, whether close or not, by the way, because I remember last year when Kobe Bryant died, I was like, oh my God, helicopter crash.
Me too.
It can be anyone. The plane crash, you know, when you hear about plane crash and you don't even know people on the plane, you're like, wow, this can happen really to anyone. And it's very normal, I think, to project your fear on those people's losses and to keep that anxiety level very low. I think I did a lot more meditation and work on myself to be mindful, to be present. And when I see that my mind is going really far away in the future, like how I'm gonna do when, you know, my kid's gonna be 20, my mom's gonna, I don't know. I was just like asking myself a question. I'm like, no, come back. You don't even know where you're gonna be tomorrow. So just, you know, go back to the present. So it's a constant effort. Like it's really like not even a daily effort. It's like an hour to hour effort to, you know, to try not to let your mind go crazy with the future, because the only thing that is guaranteed is right now. So
we
spend so much time and energy on trying to plan and project and think about what's going to happen. And it's so unpredictable. Like the only certainty in life is death. So why worry so much about so many things in the future? And I think this mindfulness in grief helped me a lot.
Because
otherwise I'll be just like thinking about cancer all the time and how it can happen to anyone.
It's funny you say that. Every time like something happens, my mom is always like, and another reminder to live in the moment, because and seize the day. And the mindfulness piece and the like presence are two lessons that it sounds like both of us have gotten, and it really makes a difference
for sure. And that's why I really started when my mom got sick, because I couldn't think about what about the next PET scan, what about the next chemo treatment, how is she going to react, will she be here next month, like will she have another year to live or two. And I just had to go back to the present all the time. So it really started before she passed, but that work that I did before she passed really helped me a lot.
Yeah.
For the first year of grief, for sure.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I feel like we should stop there. We could keep talking, I feel like, for a long time. And if you want to tell people where to find you online and so they can catch your lives, and a lot of them you have saved so people can go back and watch old ones. Is that correct?
Yeah. My Instagram is Neshama Journey, and I do have my IGTV there with all the lives that I recorded. And also there is a link in my bio with all the podcast that I recorded as well. So yeah, you can find me on Instagram to join our community. And I'm always open. My inbox is always open. So if people want to chat, want to share their story, I'm more than happy to listen.
Thank you so much. I loved the live I did with you over the summer, and just your energy about this is very calming. And so I would encourage people to go find you, follow you.
Meditation is working. If I have a calming energy,
yes,
like
it's working. Thank you so much for being here today. I really enjoyed our conversation. All right. Thank you everyone for listening. You can find us online at thegriefcoach.co and on social at @_griefcoach. If you liked what you heard, please write us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people looking for this type of content find it. Thank you. Talk to you.